I don't see that that project being driven forward presents any problems for us driving forward our investment agenda for the services out of Paddington. The electrification of the main line out of London to Bristol and to Cardiff is authorised, the work has started, and that's a committed scheme. Our new Hitachi high-speed trains are ordered, that's a committed contract. Those trains have already started being designed and built in Japan. So I don't see a real problem there at all. I see opportunities for us to actually ride on the back of the success of High Speed 2. You know, High Speed 2 will have a new station at Old Oak Common in West London, which will link High Speed 2 with the Great Western Main Line and with Heathrow Express, and potentially in the future with Eurostar. So that means people travelling from Bristol, Bath, other places in the West Country will be able to get to Old Oak Common and interchange there with a wider choice of trains than pretty much anywhere else in the whole of the UK.
So that electrification project for the main line through to Cardiff, that is definitely going ahead in your view. There's nothing that you've heard about HS2 or indeed about the row over franchising that will hold that back.
Absolutely. The electrification of the main line out of Paddington's a committed scheme. Work has already started. If you travel through Reading and look out of the window, you'll see the electrification masts are already going up. There are some people who want to create some scare stories about investment in other parts of the railway being affected by HS2, but there's no evidence that that's the case at all. And the investment on routes out of Paddington to the West Country will continue. The industry's committed to that. It's needed, and I'm sure that that will deliver benefits in due course.
There is a potential downside, though, isn't there? When we spoke to Travel Watch South West, they suggested that the service away from the electrification, that's north and south into Devon and Cornwall and up into Gloucestershire, might actually suffer, might get worse because of electrification on the main line.
Well, I don't think that's likely to happen at all. And I think, you know, it's a shame at a time that we're bringing unprecedented levels of investment into the rail industry that people are so desperate to go looking for negative news stories. This is a positive story. This is the most exciting period for railways in many generations. We're investing more money in rail than we've done for years and years. And I think we should all just celebrate that fact instead of going off trying to find bad news.
Sure, and I know it's not within your power, but wouldn't you welcome more government investment in the rest of the South West network, you know, into Devon and Cornwall, for instance?
Well, I would always welcome more investment. But I think if you look at what's already committed, there's a very, very substantial statement from both the last Labour government and this government about investing in the routes out of Paddington. We've got electrification now coming out of London to Oxford, to Newbury, to Bristol, Bristol Parkway and into South Wales. We've got a new fleet of intercity trains on order, and we've got the Crossrail service in London that will connect Paddington much, much more effectively to other parts of London. So people travelling up from the West Country on arrival at Paddington will be able to get to other parts of London more quickly than they can today. You know, my colleagues and I in the industry are doing a lot of work to look at what investment we might want beyond what's currently committed. But I think the investment that's already been committed is a great news story for the industry. It's great in particular for our customers. It's going to take a little while to deliver, but it's going to be delivered and it will make a massive difference to their journey experience.
Do you have any plans to give some hope to hard-pressed businesses and travellers in the peninsula?
We recognise that there's a need to try and connect London, Plymouth and particularly Cornwall to London faster. One of the things that we are looking at the moment is opportunities to improve journey times. We're doing that with Network Rail. I can't promise anything today, but we certainly recognise the aspirations of people in Cornwall to get to London more quickly.
So you can promise the people of Devon and Cornwall and indeed Gloucestershire will not be forgotten in this rush to electrify the main line itself?
Absolutely, and of course the new trains which will be serving the high-speed routes out of Paddington are designed very much with the objective of operating away from the electrified network. So a lot of the trains will be what we call bi-mode, so they'll have the ability to draw on the new electric supply, but they'll also have very powerful diesel engines to power them away from the electrified network.
So we won't have this effect where diesel trains simply can't run on the electric lines and that causes difficulties of interchange and so on?
No, absolutely. So for example, if you take the railway network west of Bristol to somewhere like Weston-super-Mare, the train will run as an electric train out of London. It will stop at places like Bath. It will get to Bristol. The electric pantograph will be lowered and the diesel engines will take the same train in the same levels of comfort onto Weston-super-Mare.
Can I turn to the thorny issue of fares? For another year, the government has sanctioned an above-inflation rise in fares because they want to reduce the subsidies to the railway. Can you justify a 4.1% increase at a time when many people say the service is getting worse rather than better?
I think there have been considerable improvements to the train service in recent years, but at the end of the day, the government have set out a policy. It was a government policy of the last government, and it's a policy that's been continued by the present government to gradually move the funding for the railway, in part, away from the taxpayer towards the fare payer. It's important that people realise, if they're paying more for their ticket, that that ticket increase is a reflection of that government policy. So, of course, I don't want to put ticket prices up, but that's the way the industry is regulated. We cannot just pick a figure out of thin air. The fares are regulated in the vast majority of cases. And I think in most countries in the world and in the UK, that the level of fares is very much a political decision. There is a fares regulation arrangement in place. It was the case at the start of railway privatisation about 15 years ago that fares were actually regulated at RPI minus 1%, and the last Labour government decided to move that onus more towards the fare payer with an RPI plus 1%. But at a time of huge amounts of investment in the railway, both in terms of what's actually happening today and what's planned in the future, I think the view of government is that it's fair that the fare payer pays their fair share towards that investment. And nobody can deny very, very significant sums of money are being spent on the railway network today.
But it does, for instance, cost, what is it, a couple of £1,000 a year to commute between Plymouth and Exeter. It is an expense for businesses and business people travelling to work, isn't it?
Well, more and more people are choosing to travel by train, not just for longer distance journeys to London, but in particular for local journeys. And I think when you compare the cost, particularly in the west of England, for local season tickets against the cost of running a car, against the cost of car parking in many of our towns and cities, I think that we compare very, very favourably.
Stephen Gilbert, the MP for St Austell and Newquay, wants ticket price rises to be linked to improvements in service. That's a quite reasonable idea, isn't it?
At the end of the day, these are very much political decisions. Of course, if the government want to get less premium from franchises like mine, then they can restrict the level of fares increases. And at the end of the day, that would need more government support. So if politicians want to suggest that and they're willing to fund it, then we can obviously have that discussion.
And that brings us to the franchise issue, of course. It's a ridiculous system, isn't it, really? How committed is First Group to the West Country? Might we see you throwing your toys out of the pram, pulling out because of what is a very difficult region to service, and the government isn't prepared, apparently, to support the major improvements in infrastructure and rolling stock that you would like?
Well, First Group's absolutely committed to running the Great Western franchise. It's had the franchise for some time. It's invested very significant sums of money, and we've seen huge improvements in the capacity in terms of the number of trains we run, the capacity of those trains, and things like punctuality and reliability have significantly improved. And we would like to carry on running this business. We have a lot of exciting plans to drive the business forward.
A lot of uncertainty, though, isn't there? I mean, what have you got? An extension to October this year. What happens then?
Well, there's going to be a two-year franchise beyond October, and we're working with government now to finalise what that franchise will look like and what we're asked to deliver in that period. I think everybody in the industry wishes that what had happened with railway franchising last year hadn't happened. It has introduced uncertainty, but there's a challenge for all of us to deal with that, to carry on working hard to meet our customers' needs and to make sure that the plans the industry has in the future are the right ones for our customers. What I think is absolutely clear is that more and more people are travelling by train, more people using the train now, by the way, than any time since the 1920s. And when one reflects on car ownership levels in the 1920s compared to today, that's quite an amazing statistic. But I think we will see that continued growth. I think the industry working with government will have to invest in capacity of the network, both in terms of the tracks and the signalling, but also the trains and carriages and seats for our customers. And I think you will see continued improvements to train services.